The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. We have a guest in the studio today, Tracy Lynn Martin. She is an expedition kayaker, and she is out on the Great Lakes this year trying to set a world record of kayaking around all the Great Lakes. And she's in the Thumb area right now as she began her trip down in Port Huron just a while back, not very long. And she's nice enough to stop in and tell us about her trip. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. This has been great. Thank you.
Now, how did you get into kayaking, and how does it getting into kayaking stretch out to, I think I'll just pass all the way around the Great Lakes?
Right. Well, I've always been a water person. My parents took us to the Lake of the Ozarks. I'm from Missouri. I went on a canoe trip when I was a child and loved being out on the river. I bought my first canoe when I was 18. And I believe I bought my first kayak when I was in my 30s, because you can kayak by yourself. With a canoe, you have to always find a partner and drag someone out to the water with you. And so I just love being out on the water and kayaking. And then in 2008, I heard about kayakers that race, a lot of races going on. So I signed up and did a race and was actually fairly good at it. I'm strong and I lift a lot of weights. I actually took first place in the first kayak race that I signed up for.
Well,
so I was sort of
So
you know, when you're good at something, you just keep doing it. So I've been racing since 2008, and the thing that inspired me to do the Great Lakes was I'm a nurse, so I work in adult ICU and I do neonatal ICU. And in 2014, I was at a race, and one of my kayaking friends, Joe Zellner, who's from Grand Marais, Minnesota, he made this comment that no one has ever paddled all five of the Great Lakes before. And I'm like, oh, I'm sure someone has. I mean, it's 2014. Everything's been done at least once. And he was like, no one's done all five of the Great Lakes in the same year. So it was, didn't think anything more of it. And then in 2015, a few months later, my mother was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So I ended up taking FMLA from work to stay with her to take care of her. She wanted to stay home. And so when she was sleeping, and I needed something to distract me, so I just remembered what Joe had said at the race. I started researching it, primarily just to prove him wrong and say, yeah, it has been done, and this is the person that did it. But as I started researching it, I realized he was right. I couldn't find anyone. There was two people that I found that had attempted all five of the Great Lakes. They had both failed. There were people that have done one lake for whatever reason. One gentleman took 6 years to do all five lakes. He did one lake a year. It took him 2 years to do Superior. And so then I got a notebook and I started making notes and jotting down notes. And then for the fun of it, I called a couple of these people up and talked to them on the phone and asked them questions and stuff. And then I looked up some NOAA charts and thought, well, if this was a bucket list thing, how would you go about doing this? And then I started coming up with a route. And it was just sort of a pretend thing to take my mind off of taking care of my mother when she was so ill. And then in June, she passed away. And coming back from the funeral, we were packing up her things, and the notebook was sitting there. And 2 weeks before she passed away, she had become really, really upset and sad that she had bought this grand piano, had sat in her living room for 10 years. She never learned how to play it. It was always, one day I'm going to get lessons and play this. And she was always, she had talked about being sad she never learned how to swim and that she'd never seen Australia. And you know, we were like, Mom, it's okay, you know. And you know, we made her last few weeks of her life as good for her as we could. But seeing that notebook there and packing up all of her things, I thought, I'm not waiting. I'm going to do this now. And something goes off in your head, like a switch goes off in your head. And when you decide from one moment it's going to be maybe one day I'll do it to no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right now. Let's figure out how to do it. Something goes off in your head and you do all the obstacles. Just, it's not, this is impossible to do now. It's, how can I do this now? And you start figuring out ways to do it. How can I do this financially? How can I do this with my kids? How can I and you just figure it out. People are smart, and they figure it out when they really want to do something. And so it's been 2 years in planning, and 2 years later, here I am.
Now, people up here, we have people who have cottages and stuff, and they have mm-hmm. kayaks. Uh-huh. They're plastic, and they basically hold one person, and they're easy to keep clean because they're plastic.
Right.
And I would imagine yours is a little more to it than the stuff you get at the big box stores when you take it home. Is yours wooden? Is yours
it's a composite of Kevlar and fiberglass.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Like the $6 million man of kayaks.
It's probably about an $8,000 boat. And what it started out as probably about a $6,000 boat, but I had them add a lot of modifications to it. As I paddle a surf ski, which is different from a sea kayak. And it's more of an open boat, racing boat. My boat is 18.8 inches wide and 19 feet long, and it's designed to go fast. It's designed for speed. That's how I plan on doing this. Because of the conditions of the ice, you have one calendar year, but because of the ice, it's impossible to get out onto the water early. So I'm going to make up the extra miles due to the lack of time by using a racing boat, which is what I race in. It's what I'm comfortable in anyways. So they added front hatches and rear hatches for me. Normally a ski has an understern rudder. They added an overstern rudder so I can switch out rudders. Right now with all of the ice and all of the rocks, I'm using the overstern rudder. So if I hit something, the rudder pops up out of the water and doesn't break off. With the understern rudder, that's actually more efficient to paddle with one of those. And your steering is a lot more precise, but if you hit something, it's going to go right up through the hull and knock a hole or a huge hole in your boat. So you just have to be smart about it and figure out when do you switch out the rudders. And then they also reinforced the bottom of my boat and added extra reinforcement to it just for the ice and for the rocks.
Watch out for the rocks.
Yes,
are big ones, and I used to have a little boat, and I would go to Harbor Beach, and I'd look out in the water, and there were rocks the size of houses in the harbor, and I'm like, there are cabin cruisers going over this like it's nothing, and I'm worried about my little rock.
Yeah, I've actually hit a couple of rocks already and chipped a hole in my boat, which I've already repaired, so. And I have extra fabric fiberglass with me and marine grade epoxy and everything that I need to do repairs on the spot. So I've actually had to repair my boat a few times already.
But all of this eats a little way at your paddling time too.
Well, it does, but you have to take that into consideration when you're planning. So there's going to be days, you know, calm days that I'm going to be able to get out there and paddle all day, and especially when the days get longer and get warmer. So I'll be able to make up the time that right now I'm not able to put in a full day just because of the cold and because of the ice. So, you know, it's a balancing act, but what I'm counting on is that when the days get longer and get warmer, I can spend more time out there.
That would make it, though, harder for people to plan. You know, you're going to be in Alpena on this date, you know, and people want to talk to you from the local TV or whatever.
I mean,
it makes it harder for them to know exactly when you're going to be there, but that is the way of the lakes.
Right. And I'll have support people with me, and if you needed to talk to, just to get an idea of what's going on, the support people would be a great resource to talk to. Because once it gets warmer, my plan is to spend more time paddling and getting up at sunrise, eating something, getting out on the water, paddling all day, having snacks with me on the water so I don't even have to pull off the water, and then pulling off at about an hour before sunset, setting up my bivy tent, eating something, crawling into bed, sleeping, getting up, doing it all over again. So I'm going to be cranking out miles when it gets warmer to be able to do that. And I probably won't be able to be available as much, but my support crew that's going to shadow me and the support truck, they should always be available.
In this agricultural area, we call that making hay while the sun shines.
Yeah.
You do it when you can.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, and if you're going to be doing this day after day after day, how do you keep your mind fresh? I mean, it would seem to me, you know, it might get a little, I mean, there's new scenery, there's new places to see and such, but you're basically...
How do I keep from getting bored?
How do you keep your arms from not falling off, for one thing? But I mean, you know, you'd ache at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I would have
a lot of ibuprofen
because of it, and I'd be in trouble if you just asked me to paddle across the harbor in Harbor Beach. But It's something you've had to work up to.
Right. Well, it'd be like asking a marathon runner to, you know, walk 20 miles in a day or something. You know, when your body, I'm a competitive kayak racer. I have been since 2008. So as long, you know, there's going to be days that I might push myself a little bit harder and try to go a little bit faster. But for the most part, I'm just going to do an easy pace. So it'd be like asking someone who's used to training to do marathons to walk an easy pace all day. It's not going to be an issue. It's not going to be a problem as long as I do an easy pace. But then, you know, there's going to be days that I'm going to need to crank out extra miles that I will need to do a little bit harder pace. But you can't do that every single day. So at the top of my racing season, I can maintain a 5.5 pace on flat water. Am I going to go out there and try to paddle 5.5 miles an hour every single day? No, it's ridiculous. I'd burn myself out and I'd probably hurt myself. I'd get an injury. But one day out of the week when I know that it's going to be a calm day with no wind, then I'm going to try to crank it up and do a 5.5 pace all day and do a race pace. But then the other 6 days, I'm going to be doing maybe 4.8. Maybe even 4.5 if I'm fighting a strong wind. And so you just have to be smart about it. You just have to be smart.
Is the low profile and the thin nature of a kayak give you a little less of a problem with wind blowing you around? I mean, it's unlike a great big boat. It's like a truck.
Right.
It's like a wall going down the road as opposed to a little tiny sports car where it's low to the ground and aerodynamic.
Right.
Does it help you at least try to keep a pace up?
The design of a surf ski is designed to move fast and to move in big, huge waves. It's designed for ocean paddling. So in the aspect of the ski, it is designed to be more dynamic and to be more efficient. A sea kayak is going to be a little bit shorter traditionally and wider. I think the average sea kayak is probably 22 to 23 inches wide and maybe 17 to 18 feet long. My boat's 19 feet long and 18.8 inches wide. So just in the fact that it's smaller, it's going to be more efficient in the water. And when you have a strong, like yesterday I was paddling, and I had been advised by local officials not to paddle, but I wanted to go out there and see what it was like. And I told them, you know, if I think it's too rough, I'll turn around and just come back. I ended up going from Harbor Beach to Port Hope yesterday, and the wind was strong, and there was multiple times that it felt like I was going to get knocked right out of my boat and flipped over. And you just have to brace. You have to be comfortable with your paddling skills. You can't be afraid. If you're afraid, then you tighten up and you become more wobbly and more unstable. You have to get out there. You have to be comfortable that you know what you're doing. You have to be comfortable with your skills. You have to have a good bracing technique, and you have to be comfortable to, you know, if a wave's side beaming you, you have to be able to lean into the wave. You have to keep your balance. Only one day have I really been afraid out there. That was on day two, and I turned around and went right back, because it's like, you know, you can't be out there doing what you need to do if you're afraid. So those are the things that you have to take into consideration. On day two, there was 40 mile per hour winds and huge waves, like 8 and 10 feet tall, and I lasted for half a mile, and I thought, this is crazy, and I turned around and went back. So day two, I only got in 1 mile,
so
but that's why.
So do you count that as extra miles at the end?
Well,
you did 2 miles and had to go back 2 miles?
Well,
so.
No, I did a half a mile,
oh.
So the whole day was 1 mile,
oh.
Half a mile out and a half a mile back. I have a spot tracker, which is a GPS spot tracker, which is keeping a log of all of my miles. So that 1 mile counts towards my Guinness record.
You still feel like you're going backwards when you do it.
I felt like I gave it everything I had just to stay in place.
Canoes and kayaks, most of us envision them as being very unstable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people flip over, you got to learn how to right yourself, all that kind
right,
of things.
Right, right.
Are these racing kayaks a little better than that?
Heavens no.
Are they really tippy?
They're
tippy
more
tippy.
Unstable. If, because you're the wider the boat, the more stable the boat. So you have a sea kayak that's 23 inches wide, it's going to be more stable because you have more volume. You get out there, you know, a surf ski traditionally is more unstable just because it's more narrow. I had a journalist who came out and was taking some pictures. I mean, he had he was from National Geographic, and he had talked about all these different places he had kayaked, and he was like, "Hey, I've never tried a ski before. I've been in kayaks. I've never tried a ski. Can I try your ski?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you can try it. Just be careful because it's tippy." And so the minute he sat down in it and tried to lift his feet up, he went right over in the water. And this was an experienced sea kayaker. So a surf ski takes a little bit of patience, and it takes a little bit of time to practice. But once you get it, then you've got it. So I race in what's called, race with Stellar Boats. And so I race with a SEI, which is 18 inches wide, and I race with an SEL, which is 17 inches wide. The boat that I'm doing this expedition in is 18.8, almost 19 inches wide. It's 18.8 inches, so I'm in a much more stable boat than what I'm used to. And so for me, because I race in these boats, it's very stable. But for the average person, unless you're familiar with them, they're probably very unstable. So I get that a lot from people. They're like, "How can you do this in a ski? It is so unstable." But for me, it is stable because that's what I'm used to.
But that narrow profile is what allows you to move
so fast,
easier per paddle.
Yes,
because you. Because it skims through the water a lot bigger than a bigger boat that's got to plow and make a wake.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, my boat makes no wake behind it. It's just like, it's like an arrow going through the water. So there's a give and a take. Do you sacrifice a little bit of stability for speed? And that's what I'm betting this entire expedition on. I'm sacrificing stability for speed. But for me, it's still stable.
And how do you differentiate kayaking? I mean, I've seen people who have one paddle. I've seen people who have dual paddles. Is there a difference in that, or is that based on the type of racing or canoeing or paddling you're doing?
The type of boat. So you have what's called single blading, and traditionally you single blade with either an outrigger canoe or a traditional canoe. You double blade traditionally with kayaks or with surf skis. And so with an outrigger is more of like a traditional Hawaiian boat that has like an arm that shoots off, which gives you more stability. And I actually have an outrigger system set up for my boat. If I get into some really crazy water, I can set an outrigger up. I'm trying to beat a woman, Freya Hoffmeister from Germany, who circumnavigated Australia in 2009. So she was able to bank 8,500 miles in 1 year going around the continent of Australia. And when she hit really crazy water, she made an outrigger system using a spare paddle and paddle floats on each end. So I have a system similar to that. So if I know I'm going to be paddling in really strong winds, if I'm doing a large crossing, like I might be crossing the bay coming up here, potentially it could be a 20-mile crossing. When I cross the Bay of Fundy, that's going to be a 75-mile crossing. I'll have my outrigger arms on my ski because, the wind can come up so quickly. It can be very dangerous in a very short amount of time. And I need to be safe because I need to return back to my family and my children. So I'll be putting the outrigger arms on. So traditionally, you single blade with a canoe or with an outrigger, and then you double blade with kayaks and surf skis. And usually double blading will be faster, but not always. You have some single blade people that I've seen race, and they just shoot across the water super fast. But traditionally, double blading will be faster than single blading.
Does that give you more balance because you're going one side to the other as opposed to sticking to one side?
Yes. Well, it gives you better balance because you can brace. You've got two sides that you can brace on with a double blade. So, like, if you're getting side beamed on one side, your paddle's right there and you brace. If you're getting side beamed on the opposite side, you flip. It's like instantaneously I've braced and I'm stable now. With a single blade, because I have paddled single blades, you really it's very, very hard to single blade a narrow boat because, one, you're off balance a little bit. With a very narrow boat, you have to keep your back straight. You have to keep your balance. And if you get side beamed, you just have to know how to turn. But when you're single blading, you've got your paddle on one side and you're going to lean to that side maybe a little bit more, and then now you're off balance. So it's just a lot harder. But I feel like double blading is just, I can do both, and I've raced doing both. But I think that double blading gives you more stability.
Do you use it kind of like a person on a high wire where you
yes.
where it actually gives you a little, because you're on that skinny little yeah. line that you're going through and they're walking on a skinny line
right.
and the pole seems to help them. It can
that's
help
a good
you as
analogy.
Well.
That's a very good analogy. Yeah, I could. That's a good analogy.
Okay. And I can tell you one thing,
uh-huh.
the lady you went around to Australia,
uh-huh.
You won't have to deal with great whites following you.
No great whites, no alligator, no crocodiles. Yeah, she's amazing. I have so much respect for this woman because she would have to pull out of the water and keep her boat between her and the water as she sat in up her tent, because she never knew when a crocodile would come out of the water, because they can come out so fast. They're like a bullet. They shoot out of the water, they grab you, they drag you under, and they drown you. So she always had to keep her boat between her in the water and get her tent set up really fast. And her philosophy was that crocodiles didn't see a tent as a food source. So once you were in your tent, then you were safe. And she would be in her tent looking out her tent and see huge crocodiles, like 10 feet long, walking right by her tent. But as long as she was in her tent, she felt safe because she felt like they were sort of dumb animals. They didn't recognize there was a food source inside the tent. But when she was outside of the tent, she always had to be careful and always had to make sure her boat was between her and the water.
And that's because Australia has saltwater crocodiles.
Yes, yes.
Actually go out into the ocean and
yes.
Forage.
Yes, and then she also had to deal with sea snakes and jellyfish, and the amount of things that she had to deal with was just, I would have no interest in paddling around Australia, and I have the most respect for her. I just have to deal with huge waves and cold.
Yeah, the gales of July.
Yes.
On the Great Lakes.
Yes.
Now, you are going to go through some tricky parts as well. I mean, mm-hmm. you're obviously not going over Niagara Falls in a kayak, so,
right.
so you have to portage around some
yeah.
of these things. But you told me you're going to go through some locks up at Sault Ste. Marie.
Yes, on the Canadian side. The Canadian side allows smaller boats like canoes and kayaks to go through the locks. So I'll be going through the locks up there on the Canadian side to get to Superior. And
is it harder to stand still in a kayak? I mean, because I would think the motion would keep you going and balanced, whereas sitting still
right.
might especially if the water's churning around
right.
you as they raise it up.
You have something called primary stability and secondary stability. Primary stability is when you're sitting still, and secondary stability is when you're moving. Traditionally, a surf ski is more stable as it's moving. Primary stability might not be as good, but all you do is put your feet in the water, use your feet as outriggers, and now you're totally stable. So on my Facebook page, there's a lot of video that I've done on my iPhone 7 when I'm out paddling, and I've been in huge swells already, just the short amount of trip, and high winds and choppy waves. But the minute that I put my feet in the water, I sort of, use my feet as outrigger stabilizers. I'm totally stable. So that's just how you keep your boat stable when you're not moving.
So you're going to go around Lake western side of Lake Huron, then
yes.
you go under the Straits of Mackinac
mm-hmm.
and do Lake Michigan.
All of Lake Michigan.
And come back up to the Straits, and then you go up the Sioux into Lake Superior.
Right.
Hopefully in closer to summertime
June.
And whenever
the
lake is a little bit warmer than just
right.
barely above freezing, because
right.
Lake Superior just never really warms up
no.
as far as that goes. Do you have to wear like a dry suit
yeah.
or something? Because, once you get soaked in those temperatures,
you
have
10
minutes.
Lose
feeling rather quickly.
Lake Superior has killed numerous paddlers. There was one individual, a man who was paddling Lake Superior, I think a year and a half ago, for a children's charity, and he got separated from his boat, and he had all the right equipment. He had his dry suit, he had his spot tracker, he had everything he was supposed to have, and he got separated from his boat, and he hit his spot tracker. The Coast Guard found him like 48 minutes later, and he had already died from hypothermia. So without a dry suit, you have 10 minutes to survive Lake Superior, because it has, the water temperature is 40 degrees year-round. With a dry suit, you have about 30 to 35 minutes. So, but the thing, though, is the other thing I really love about a ski is with a sea kayak, for those of you who paddle sea kayaks, you know it takes a long time, for me at least, it takes a long time to get back into a sea kayak. You know, you fall into the water. Now you have to swim around and get your paddle floats out. And then you have to secure your paddle onto the boat. And then you have to blow up the paddle float. Then you have to try to get back into your boat. And the wave that knocked you out of your boat, there's another wave just like it coming to crash into you again and roll you around. And I find it very difficult to get back into a sea kayak. A surf ski, however, which is what I'm paddling, there's no paddle float, there's nothing. You fall out. All you do is you take your hands, you push yourself up, because it's an open boat. You push yourself up, you swing your leg around like you're riding a horse, and you're back in. I can get back into my boat in under a minute without anything helping me. I'm just back in my boat. And so now you're back in your boat, and you're bracing with your paddle, and you're ready to hit the wave, the sibling of the wave that just knocked you out. Now you're ready to brace and get that wave, and you're not going to get knocked out.
And just hoping it's not its big brother instead of its sibling.
But now you're prepared for it. And the main thing is getting out of the water, you know. A surf ski rides lower into the water than a sea kayak traditionally. So even if you're having to ride out really bad waves, you can push yourself up and lay on your boat on your stomach in like 20 seconds and you're out of the water. And that's the main thing. You know, that's what hypothermia is going to get you, is when you're sitting in that cold water. Even if you're on your stomach, lengthways of the boat, you can ride the waves out, because most of these waves are huge swells and you can ride them out like you're in a raft.
We were talking a little bit before the show, and you told me your boat has a hole in it.
Normally, yes,
normally
yes.
Has a hole in it.
Yes, it's.
Is it kind of like, you know, a power boat where you have a plug in the back and, you know, you can drain the bilge if you needed to,
right,
by going forward fast,
right,
enough, and then plug it back up. But you have this permanently, and there is no plug. It just, when you slow down to a certain point, it starts filling?
It fills up to a certain point. You have a basin where your feet and your legs are at, and it, obviously it doesn't fill up all the way, but it fills up about halfway when you're sitting still, which really isn't such a bad thing, because the extra water gives you a little bit more stability.
And like ballast?
Right. And then as soon as you start paddling, it's called a ventrary drain. And once you start paddling, then the water just self-drains. And then as long as you're paddling, then your boat's free of any water. So, but it's I like that design. There's been other designs. People will plug them up and stuff. But I like having that open design personally.
Well, hopefully it doesn't fill up with our zebra mussels and clogs your system.
No, yeah, hopefully not.
You're going to be going around. Did you have to clear this with U.S. and Canadian authorities
just,
all the way around the route? Because they're going to want to know where
right.
you're at, because if something happens, they need to be able to have some idea mm-hmm. what to look for and where to go.
So, in a roundabout way to answer your question, I have come up over the last 2 years with a support team. I have a really great group of about 25 individuals that I have handpicked over the last 2 years who have willing to volunteer their time to help me. And every person has a skill specific for whatever I needed. Mary Strope is my media coordinator. She sends out news presses constantly all the time. I have another individual. His name is Tab, and he's the head of the Iowa Kayaking Association. And
a lot of kayaking in Iowa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through cornfields?
I don't. You know, I've had a huge.
I believe the one
right,
side with the jagged edge
right.
is a river. I assume that's probably where they go a lot. But
you know, I just know that he's been a really. I've never actually met him personally, but he reached out to me, and he's been a really amazing individual. And He's worked a lot on this. And then there was another individual, his name is Thomas Payton, and he's here from Michigan. He has actually reached out to the Coast Guard and to local law enforcement and to let them know what I'm doing. I have a Nexus pass, so I can bounce in between U.S. and Canadian waters. All I have to do is get on my cell phone and call the number on the back of my card, give them the number of my card, and 8 times out of 10, they'll tell me just to go on through. Every now and then, what I've been told is that they will want you to go to the nearest port and wait for an official to come to go through your boat and your things. You have to legally wait 4 hours, and if they haven't come within the 4 hours to check you, you call back the number, say, you know, this is my number, I've been waiting here for 4 hours, and then they'll usually let you go on through. So with my Nexus pass, that's what I've done to be able to cross between the borders. But now Thomas, he has contacted the Coast Guard. He's in contact with local law enforcement. Actually, it was because of him that the local law enforcement at Port Hope yesterday asked me not to paddle, just because they were so encased in ice and they didn't feel like it would be safe for me to be out there alone or have a place that I could land. I used my executive decision power making skills and chose to go ahead and try anyways, and I was able to land. Cranked out 10 miles yesterday. But so all these different individuals, they all come with a different skills, and they've all just been amazing. And I couldn't do this by myself. There's no way. The logistics behind doing something like this, there's no way you could do it. You know, I have a person helping me drive my support vehicle and shadowing me. I have a person who's working on logistics. I have people contacting people. I have people saying, you know, reaching out, trying to get me places to stay at. This is by no means a one-person operation. It would be impossible.
Well, I told you before in the room, get on your phone and get the kayak app.
Yeah.
And they will get you lodging.
Yeah, that would be cool. I'd like that.
When you're out there, people should stay away. Uh-huh. They, as like you would with any kayaker, because people get nosy. What are they doing? Or this is that lady who's going around the lakes, and if they get too close, their wakes can cause you problems, and you just don't need people around you.
Well, I mean,
disturbing your, because you're trying to make headway,
right.
And if they get in the way, you don't want to have to go around them.
Well, you know, that's sort of a fine line. If you've got a huge boat that makes a huge wake, I mean, as long as I know you're there and I can hit it. Face on, I'm okay with it. You know, I don't want people circling me trying to yell out questions while I'm trying to paddle. But if you're actually, you know, if you're just coming up a little ways away and waving or something, that's cool. I would love that. That would be great encouragement, especially, you know, if I'm out there and I feel like I'm having a bad day and fighting the wind and the waves, and then a boat comes up and they're waving and wishing me well, that would be a huge boost. I would appreciate that. People that come up along the shoreline, I actually have a book for Guinness that they can sign. Just say, hey, we saw her out there. She's actually doing this. That would be great if people were willing to come up and sign my book. And if you actually have a kayak and you want to paddle with me for a couple of hours, that would be great too. I would never turn someone away. What I've told people is that I'm going to plan on paddling about a 4.8 pace, except on days that I'm going to try to crank out more miles. On calm days, I'm going to try to crank it up to 5.5. But on an average, I'll be trying to do 4.8. So if you can paddle a 4.8 and you want to come out and paddle with me and talk, that would be great, as long as you know that I have to paddle, and if you want to stop for an hour and have lunch, I can't stop with you. But if you want to just come out and paddle with me to say hi, I would appreciate all of that.
I have a feeling if I tried to paddle 4.8, I wouldn't be able to talk.
Yeah.
Never been quite in that kind of shape. So you intend to do this in 265 days.
Yes.
Because we do have a winter season where kayaking just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And is it the miles in a year, or is mm-hmm. it the 265?
No, it's the...
It's in a calendar year that
right.
you do it?
Right. So. It's one calendar year. Freya Hoffmeister, the woman I'm trying to beat, she started in January of 2009 and finished in December of 2009. So it's how many miles can you paddle in one calendar year? So actually, I had I could have started in January, and I have until December 31st. So in December of 2015, because I started planning this in June of 2015, December of 2015, I actually came up to Lake Erie, because that's where I'll be finishing at, and paddled around the Lake Erie Metro Park and paddled on Lake Erie in December to make sure that this was feasible, that I could do this, and I was able to do it.
Do you have to constantly keep your boat in shape? Do you have to wash it down? Do you have to keep it waxed or whatever to slip better through the water? Because, you know, some spots in the lake around here are relatively clean, and some of them you're going to get to are going to leave a film on you that you're going to want to probably take off. So do you have to monitor this? Do you have to allow a little time in the morning to clean her up? Because I'm sure at night the only thing you're thinking of is, I'm crawling, my ache.
Yeah. Actually, I tend to probably be more careful of my boat when I come off the water than I do in the mornings traditionally, but
you don't want
it's
it
a little bit
on there and harden or whatever.
Well, it's not so much that I first, you know, I get off and I check the bottom of my boat to make, you know, especially if I felt like, you know, maybe I hit some ice or I hit some rocks. The first thing I do is check the bottom of my boat to make sure my boat's still intact, make sure there's no spider cracks, make sure that the gel coat is intact, make sure I didn't knock a hole in my boat.
Besides the one that's already there.
Right, besides the one that's already there.
I still find that amazing that you're riding in this thing all these days and thousands of miles with a hole in it.
Yeah,
I mean, it would make me paddle faster knowing there's a hole in it.
I guess if you call it a drain, it's more of a drain, not a hole. But yeah, I've already knocked a little hole in the back of my boat, so I repaired that. I have fiberglass with me and marine grade epoxy with me, so I've already patched one hole that was in the back of my boat from hitting a rock. And so that's the first thing I do is I check my boat to make sure it's stable. In the mornings before I head out, the last thing I do before I head out is I check my hatches, I check my rudder line, I make sure that everything is secure, because the last thing you want to do is go out there and have your hatch not on securely and it fills up with water or your rudder line would break. So those are just little things.
Bad to be out there without a rudder.
Yeah, that would suck big time.
How close do you stay to shore? I mean, you're talking about hitting rocks, and,
right.
And I know you get far enough out into the lake, the only thing you're going to hit is open water.
I think for the average, I'm about a mile out.
So you can still see shore, no matter what you're doing. You're keeping that, and if it's foggy, you're probably going to be closer.
Well, actually, no. I hit fog the other day, and so when I see the fog coming, usually what I do is I have a deck compass on my boat.
Oh,
so if I see the fog coming, I'll turn my boat in the direction of the shoreline. And I check the reading of the compass, and then I go and I straighten my boat out and go in the direction that I'm going, which is mostly more parallel to the shoreline. And then that way, if I do get caught in the fog, then I know I can aim my boat in the direction that I want to go and start heading closer to the shoreline to try to paddle out of the fog.
And in the fog, you aren't slowly creeping more towards the Canadian side.
Tell you where you're going. Out into oblivion, out into the middle of a lake. That would suck.
Yeah, you'd be paddling a long time trying to find your way back.
Yeah.
8,600 miles, is there anything you could say, you know, is this like driving from here to New York? Is this like driving to California? I mean, the Great Lakes are massive.
Right, they are.
And, you know, people, I know I have relatives who are in Arizona, and we got lakes. You don't got lakes.
No, there's nothing like these.
And you know,
these are oceans
on the other side. And yeah, but you want to get to shore, it's about 500 miles.
Yeah, these are like inland oceans. These are like, they're spectacular and they're amazing. And I, you know, before I even planned to do this expedition, I always loved driving up and paddling on Lake Superior. It's just, nothing is so beautiful and pristine, and especially on the north side of Superior, there's no houses, it's just wilderness. I love the feeling of being out there alone on the water.
Make it hard for the people following you though, because it's so remote?
Yeah.
And not a lot of roads.
Right.
And if there are roads, then not a lot of good roads.
Right.
You know, they're just basically there for emergencies and for the few people who do have a cabin or something back there. Does that make it more difficult for your people following you?
Well, I mean, it can, but I have what's called a spot tracker on my boat, follow me spot. And So there, you can go to the website, the Spot Tracker website, and you can see exactly where I'm at on the Spot Tracker, and it dings every 15 minutes. So you can see me moving down the shoreline every 15 minutes. And so, you know, if we've lost cell phone service, so I have a Verizon, which is, I think the reason I picked Verizon, because it has the best service. You drop fewer calls. But if I don't have the cell phone service, then they can always go to my Spot Tracker, pull it up on the computer, and see exactly where I'm at. So now if I don't have cell phone service, and if they don't have cell phone service, and if they can't pull up on the computer where my spot is showing me that I'm at, then that could be a problem. But so far, we haven't run into that. But again, I'm always going to have enough supplies to last me for 3 days. So in my boat right now, if you pulled the hatches off, I've got enough. I don't have any extra water with me at this point, but I have enough food to last me for probably 24 hours. And I have my tent and I have my sleeping bag in the hatches of my boat right now. So if something would happen and I had to pull off, I have my water bag that I keep down by my feet. I've got extra food in my boat. I've got a tent, or my bivy sack. It's not really a tent, but it's a bivy sack, and my sleeping bag in my boat with me at all times. So I could pull my boat off, hunker down, get my tent up, get in my sleeping bag, and just wait out any really bad storm that it might come up all of a sudden. And my support crew, they know that, and they just have to have faith in me that I would be able to do that.
I'm getting kind of close to the top of the hour here.
Okay.
I did want to make mention, the people might not realize you're doing this with rheumatoid arthritis.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you know, that kind of usually slows people down, and you seem to be just picking up the pace.
I do. I have rheumatoid arthritis. I was diagnosed with it in 2010, started showing symptoms in 2009. And you have to have a good doctor and be on your medications. But my message that I'm trying to also work as a nurse, I've done adult ICU and neonatal ICU. And when I did adult ICU, patients would come into the hospital with these chronic illnesses, not only just RA, but multiple chronic illnesses. And they had just sort of given up on life and given up on doing the things that they love. And they were just a shell of a person. And my message to people with chronic illnesses is, if you have something that you love doing, if you love taking your dog for a walk, if you love going out and gardening, if you just love going out and walking by the lake, you know, don't stop what you're doing. Yeah, you wake up and you hurt. And I get that. You wake up, you're stiff, you hurt. You hurt really bad sometimes. You know, you just have to work through it and get outside. And if you start doing the things that give you purpose and give you meaning and give you love in your life, then you feel better. And if you feel better mentally, then you're going to start feeling better physically. But the minute you give up on the things that you love, then you just become a shell of a person. And I just want people to realize that just because you have a chronic illness doesn't mean you have to stop doing the things that you love. Maybe you have to modify what you do. Maybe you have to adapt and do things a little bit differently. But, you know, back when I had a really bad flare and I had my right wrist hurt a lot, I had a brace and I had to learn how to paddle with a brace on my wrist, which can be challenging. But if you love it enough, you figure out how to do it. And you figure out how to continue doing the things that you love. So that's my message to people.
Sometimes there's more satisfaction when it's harder than when it's easy to do.
Right, yes. So my last thing I'd like to say is, if you see a woman with a boat on your shore, before you come out and kick her off of your shore at like 8 or 9 o'clock at night, you know, maybe give me a little bit of leeway to camp on your shore. Camp in your backyard.
And what is the website if they want to follow you?
Oh, my website is Just Around the Point, POINTE. So it's www.justaroundthepoint.com. And I'm named it that because when I'm racing and I'm hurting and I'm feeling tired, I tell myself I just have to get around the next point, just have to get around the next point. And then so I would take like a 50-mile race and I'd make it short and be like, okay, just have to get around the next point. So that's why this is called Just Around the Point. And also, if you want to friend me on Facebook, you have to type in Tracy, T-R-A-C-I, Lynn, L-Y-N-N, Martin. I post daily videos that I've taken on my iPhone when I'm out paddling on my Facebook page.
Well, terrific. We wish you well.
Thank you.
good kayaking, I would say.
Thank
sailing,
you.
But you don't have a sail. You're
no.
kayaking.
Yeah, all and, human power.
Well, at least you don't have to pay for gas.
That is true.
Except for the vehicles following
yes.
you.
Yes.
And we wish you well. Wish you a safe trip.
Thank you very much.
Good luck on making the Guinness record of
Thank you.
Paddling all the way around the Great Lakes and having two arms that still work to show for it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here.
Our guest today on the program has been Tracy Lynn Martin. She's an experienced kayaker, and she's raced. She's done all these types of things, and now she's trying to saunter around the Great Lakes within 265 days. She's left herself enough time, if she has some bad weather, to stick in port for a day or two, and believe me, you will need it.
Yes.
And she's started off in Port Huron. She's coming through the Thumb right now, so you've got quite a ways to go, and be strong, feel good.
Thank you very much.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.